Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Oh yeah, a little bit of game show music because it's time for the Catholic Answers Game Show. I am Cy Kelly, your game show host, and for a little bit of a switcheroo, we've got our contestants in studio with us today. We may have done that before. I can't remember, but it's exciting to have the contestants in the studio. But also, I am a little afraid of it because often my questions are... they produce a frustration bordering on violence in the contestants. So you two will just have to stay calm. Dr. Carlo Broussard is our special guest for the game show, as he is every time. He's still special, but he's always our guest. Carlo, thanks for being here to help us out with the game show.
Cy, it's great to be here, man. Looking forward to it. It's really cool to have in-studio guests. I was just talking to them before we went on the air. I don't remember there ever being an in-studio guest. Maybe there was, and I just don't remember, but this is pretty cool to at least have both of them. If we've had in-studio guests, I don't think we've had both.
And it's been years that we've been doing the game show now, so it could have happened somewhere in that period. At my age, there's this ancient period called more than 6 months ago, in which everything is shrouded in a mysterious fog. So it might have, but I don't know. Both of you are either students or one of you is a student, one of you is a graduate of John Paul the Great Catholic University. Is that correct?
Yep. Yes, sir.
And that is up the road from us in Escondido, California. Let's start with Alex. Alex, you will be contestant number one today. That's because you walked into the studio first. So that's how that worked. Nice job being prompt. Alex, tell us something interesting about you.
My pinky's double jointed.
Oh my gosh. He was so prepared for that.
They might have warned us.
Oh my gosh. Oh, well, your pinky is double jointed. Congratulations on that. What year are you up there at John Paul the Great Catholic University?
I'm a sophomore.
You're a sophomore. Yep. All right. And what do you study there?
It's called communications media, but it's basically a film degree with screenwriting emphasis.
Very cool. Very cool. Because it's a media and entrepreneurship are the kind of the emphases of the school. Yeah. I mean, it's a Catholic school, so the emphasis, of course, is Jesus. But they're preparing you to be in media entrepreneurs.
Yeah, it's basically like, how do you evangelize through the media, kind of.
That is so cool. And here you are doing it. Yep. Here you are. All right. Also with us, Mark, a graduate. Mm-hmm. Congratulations on graduating.
Thank you, sir.
And what did you study?
So I also studied communications media, but emphasis in animation.
Oh, really? You can do that? Mm-hmm. And animation. Oh, that is so cool. And it's a solid Catholic place where you can study all these cool media things.
Yes, sir.
Is that what you found?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're both very, very polite. So I will try to work on my manners for this episode. Mm-hmm. Here's the way it works. I'm going to go through the rules, all right? And then I will ask you, do you understand the rules? Just say yes, okay? Whatever happens. All right, so there's three rounds in the Catholic Answers game show. The last round is what we call your final judgment. You're both hoping to get to your final judgment today because only one of you will. That will be determined by the first two rounds. The way the final judgment works is there are seven true or false questions. So that's for the end if you make it to your final judgment. The first two rounds are multiple choice questions. Each of you will get three multiple choice questions in round one and then three multiple choice questions in round two. At the end, we just add up the points. Whoever is ahead goes on to their final judgment, and whoever is behind goes out and starts warming up the car for the ride back. All right? Is that all clear?
Yep.
Everything's clear on that? Mm-hmm. Okay. There's one more rule. There's two more rules. Where you get two, what we call afterlife lines, and if you use one, it's gone. If you use it in round one, it's gone. It doesn't come back in round two. Mm-hmm. So over the course of your six questions in round one and two, you can, one, ask Dr. Broussard to take away one wrong answer. So your question essentially becomes a 50-50. Okay. So if there's one you'd like to have the wrong answer take, you know, give yourself a 50-50 shot on, just ask him to take away the wrong answer. The other afterlife line is you can just ask him to give you the correct answer, and he will give you the correct answer. All right?
Okay.
All clear?
Yes, sir.
Any questions?
Nope. May the best man win.
Oh, look at that beautiful sportsmanship.
Sportsmanship.
That was very touching. There is one other detail that I did not tell you, however.
Uh-oh.
When you ask Dr. Broussard to give you the correct answer, he will do so in Pig Latin.
Ooh,
all right? He is required to give the answer in Pig Latin. Shall we begin?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. The only thing I would ask you in addition is please let me ask the question twice because people play along at home. I do encourage you to play along at home. Maybe you're in the car. Get a pencil and a piece of paper. Wake up the kids. Get grandma and grandpa. Gather around the table. It is time to play the Catholic Answers game show. Usually I say wake up grandma and grandpa, but it started to seem mean to old people. And you're not even supposed to say old people. I don't know if you know that because old people are very offended by the word old. And a lot of that has to do with how old they are. All right, here we go. You ready?
Yes, sir.
You're first, Alex. Here's your question number one. Please allow me to read it twice. How old? Oh, I have to tell you one other thing. Can I just go? A lot of the questions are about the Feast of the Assumption of Mary. And that's because we were going to do this show on the Feast of the Assumption of Mary, and then there was a scheduling snafu, so I realized that this is like months late. But just try to imagine it's the Feast of the Assumption of Mary, and that's why so many questions are about the Feast of the Assumption of Mary. Mm-hmm. Also, then there's the laziness factor of I didn't want to write new questions, so I'm just using them. Ready? Mm-hmm. How old is the celebration of the Feast of the Assumption of Mary, Alex? Less than 100 years old? Roughly 500 years old? More than 1,000 years old. Once again, how old is the celebration of the Feast of the Assumption of Mary? Less than 100 years old? Roughly 500 years old? More than 1,000 years old?
Because I know there's stuff that's like from 100 years ago, but it's just, I think that's the Immaculate Conception. So I'm gonna say roughly 500 years.
This is an ancient feast, Alex. Oh. It's more than 1,000 years old. Right, Carlo?
Yeah, that's right.
I just have to check with the apologist to see if I'm correct.
Yeah, definitely more than 1,000 years old. We have a belief in Mary's bodily assumption that dates as early as the 3rd century. There are what is called transitus stories, which some scholars put to the middle of the 3rd century, talking about Mary's bodily assumption. You have a 4th century priest by the name of Timothy of Jerusalem talking about Our Lady being assumed and raised higher in higher regions. With regard to the feast itself, we have one called James of Sarug in right around 490, and was inspired by the Feast of Our Lady's Assumption, writing a poem in which he expresses the fact that Our Lady was assumed into heaven and speaks of her sacred body going forth into paradise. And that was inspired by the feast. So the feast definitely goes all the way back to the 400s, and some scholars even will argue for the 300s as well. So it is definitely more than 1,000 years old.
All right, here's your first question, Mark, and please allow me to read it twice. When was the Assumption of Mary formally declared a dogma of the Catholic Church? A, in 1517, B, in 1854, C, in 1950. Once again, when was the Assumption of Mary formally declared a dogma of the Catholic Church? A, in 1517, B, in 1854, C, in 1950.
I'm going to say B.
Oh, Mark,
we are killing
B.
You.
Yeah, 1854, that's the Immaculate Conception. Cy tricked you on that one.
No.
We're asking about the bodily assumption declaration of the dogma. That was in 1950 by Pope Pius XII in his Munificentissimus Vincentissimus Deus, which is Latin for the most bountiful God. And note that this is the formal declaration of it being a dogma. That is the church definitively recognizing it to be divinely revealed. But that doesn't mean it wasn't already infallibly taught. Pope Pius XII actually affirms in that document that the Mary's bodily assumption was infallibly taught by way of the universal and ordinary magisterium of the church. So it was already an infallible teaching, but Pope Pius XII was making it even more clear and specifying it's not just infallible, but we see it as part of divine revelation.
Apparently not a big topic covered at John Paul the Great Catholic University, the Assumption of Mary. But unfortunately, there's a lot more Assumption of Mary questions to come. So, all right, here's your second question, Alex. Oh, you know what? I better take a break, and then we'll do the second question. All right, everybody take a breather. We will be right back with more Catholic Answers Game Show on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a question but prefer to ask it privately? Catholic Questions can help. Go to CatholicQuestions.com to ask your question online, email us, drop us a letter, or give us a call. Longtime Catholic Answers Live apologist and author Jim Blackburn or another Catholic Questions apologist will be happy to assist you. Catholic Questions proudly supports Catholic Answers Live, so visit us at CatholicQuestions.com today. That's CatholicQuestions.com.
This is Jim Pinto, director of EWTN Media Missionaries. Mother Angelica said, "The essence of evangelization is to tell everybody Jesus loves you." You can help EWTN share the good news by becoming a media missionary. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Answers Game Show. A little bit of fun for the Columbus Day holiday here in the United States. We've got two wonderful contestants here with us, Alex and Mark, both from John Paul the Great Catholic University, a wonderful young university doing magnificent formation and helping people be ready to work in media. And that, boy, do we need Catholics in the media. So both of them, one a graduate, one still a student there. Alex, the next question is for you. Alex, the earliest known hymn to Mary, the Subtuum Praesidium, dates to about A, the 1200s, B, the 900s, why do you look depressed right now? B, the 900s, or C, the 300s. Once again, the earliest known hymn to Mary, the Subtuum Praesidium, dates to about the 1200s. Or that's A, the 1200s, B, the 900s, or C, the 300s.
Well, I hope this isn't wrong. Okay, I'm going to say C, the 300s, because it has to start early. Let's call.
Let's call.
The sound effects.
What'd you say, Carla?
Great call. That's right. Yeah, so Subtuum Praesidium, under thy protection, this ancient Christian hymn, to Our Lady, in which it says, "Beneath your compassion we take refuge, O Theotokos, the God-bearer. Do not despise our petitions in time of trouble, but rescue us from dangers, only pure, only blessed one." And it actually, you know, you said the 300s, and some scholars do put it in the 300s, but some even push it back further to about AD 230 to 250. So we could Wow. even say the 200s. And there's a lot of debate circulating the dating of the hymn, but some legitimate scholars even put it earlier.
I believe the point here, though, is Christians have been fostering love and respect for Mary for a very, very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Not just love, respect, and veneration, but the actual request for help and intercession.
Ah, that's a good point, yeah.
Which ties in nicely to my forthcoming book, The Saints Pray for You, in which I actually quote the Subtuum.
You know what? And since Carlo mentioned his book, I'm just going to – each of you gets one of the first copies of Carlo's new book, The Saints Pray for You. It's coming out right now. We don't know if it's out today or tomorrow. And so you might have to drive back to get it or give us an address. I don't know if we have it in the building, but – each of you now is the proud owner of The Saints Pray for You.
Thank you.
How about that?
Awesome.
All right, here's your second question. You ready, Mark?
Yes, sir.
Which of the following is not a Marian dogma? A, conceived without sin. B, Sacred Heart. C, Mother of God. Once again, which of the following is not a Marian dogma? A, conceived without sin. B, Sacred Heart. Or C, Mother of God?
B.
Oh, now you guys are rolling. Now you guys are rolling.
Good job. Let's go.
Yep. Conceived Without Sin, we already mentioned that one, right? 1854, Pope Pius IX. That was the Immaculate Conception, Dogma of the Faith, Part of Divine Revelation, Mother of God, Council of Ephesus, 431, the Theotokos, the God-bearer, definitively declared to not only be infallible, but scholars acknowledge that that's part of divine revelation as well. And so, but the Sacred Heart, yeah, that's not something that's been definitively declared as part of divine revelation. Although it's a reasonable theological conclusion.
Your next question, Alex. And this concludes round one for you. This is your last question of round one. You have used none of your afterlife lines. Which gospel narrates the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem? A, Matthew. B, Mark. C, John. Once again, which gospel narrates the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem? A, Matthew. B, Mark. Or C, John.
Can I knock off one of the answers?
You can ask him. It's up to him if he's going to help you or not. But.
All right, so we're going to go 50-50 here, so I'm knocking off one of the answers. I'm going to knock off Mark.
Oh, I think he did you good there. It should help if you think about the beginning of the Gospels. Which Gospel narrates the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem? A, Matthew, or C, John?
I'm pretty sure John just cuts right to, like, past that, so I'm going to say Matthew.
That's what I was trying to get you to do. Think about the beginning of the Gospels. Yes, exactly, Matthew. Thank you. Thank you, Carlo, for taking off Mark. I thought, if he takes off John, that's a little bit mean.
I was feeling a little generous today.
Yeah. All right. I'll tell you what. Let's do a gospel question for you.
All righty.
Mark, this is your last question of round one. You have not used any of your afterlife lines. Which gospel narrates Jesus washing the feet of the apostles? A, Matthew. B, Mark. C, John. Once again, which gospel narrates the washing, Jesus washing the feet of the apostles? A, Matthew. B, Mark. C, John.
OBC, John.
Woo!
Dang.
No hesitation at all.
Yeah.
It's the reading on Good Friday? Oh, no, Holy Thursday, right?
Yeah, that would be right.
Yeah, that's right. John 13, 1 through 17. That's the text.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very good. You guys, I'm going to be honest with you. That was a slow start, but you rallied. You have, going into round two now, Alex, have one afterlife line yet. Just ask Carlo to give you the correct answer. And Mark, you have two lifelines left, the 50-50 and the correct answer afterlife line. All right. You guys ready for round two?
Let's do it.
Yep.
All right. That will start again with you, Alex. Your first question of round two, at what point... this is a moral question. At what point is it acceptable to directly attack non-combatants in a war? A, when an enemy is hiding among the non-combatants. B, never. C, when it will save lives by bringing the war to an end. Once again, at what point is it acceptable to directly attack non-combatants in a war? A, when an enemy is hiding among the non-combatants. B, never. Or C, when it will save lives by bringing the war to an end?
I'm going to say B, never.
And you would be right, Alex. Good job, man. Yeah, and directly attack is the key phrase there, because that's involving an involuntary act against an innocent human being, which is intrinsically evil. There can never be any condition or circumstance or any intention that could justify direct violence against an innocent human being. Now, with regard to the question whether non-combatants can die as an effect or a consequence of war and going after combatants, that involves what is called the principle of double effect. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church actually lays out the conditions that have to be met for that principle to apply. in paragraph 2309, 2309. So if anybody listening wants to check out what the Catechism has to say on the principle of double effect, they can do so in 2309.
I feel proud of you and your university and your parents, though, for knowing you can't murder non-combatants or you can't attack non-combatants. Good for you. Yours is a just war theory question. Okay. Mark, here we go. According to just war theory, a war must have a reasonable chance of success to be considered just. It must also have A, proportionality, B, international sanction, or C, approval of religious authorities. Once again, according to just war theory, a war must have a reasonable chance of success to be considered just. It must also have A, proportionality, B, international sanction, or C, approval of religious authorities.
Can I get 50-50 from Dr. Carlo?
Okay, so I'm going to eliminate B, international sanction.
So it's either, I'll read the whole thing again. According to just war theory, a war must have a reasonable chance of success to be considered just. It must also have A, proportionality, or C, approval of religious authorities.
I'm going to take a stab at it. So C?
Oh, no. Yeah. Whenever you have a religious authority saying that a war is just or a war is unjust, that is actually a reasonable judgment that is subject to error and is not binding on us as Catholics. So a Catholic could legitimately disagree with the Pope, say, who comes and says, well, given the principles of just war theory, I conclude this particular war is just or unjust. Catholics would be free to disagree with the Pope on that. So proportionality is the right answer there. The Catechism talks about this as the fourth condition for a just war. In paragraph 2309, it says the use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. The power of modern means of destruction weighs very heavily in evaluating this condition of proportionality. So again, whenever you go in the war, the evils that the war will produce and the disorders can never be graver than the evil that you're trying to eliminate. So there has to be a proportion between the evil you're trying to eliminate and the negative effects of that war. If the negative effects of the war are going to be disproportioned, greater than the evil that you're trying to eliminate with war, then you ought not to engage in war. The war would not be just.
And that probably refers to quite a few modern wars, by the way. We're on to your second question, Alex, of round one. Here we go. You each have one lifeline left. That's the just get Carlo to give you the correct answer, and he will do so. What is the Catholic belief concerning the necessity of good works for salvation? A, good works play a role in our salvation. B, good works are not part of salvation, but can help us store up treasure in heaven. Or C, salvation is by faith alone, apart from works. Once again, what is the Catholic belief concerning the necessity of good works for salvation? A, good works play a role in our salvation. B, good works are not a part of salvation, but can help us to store up treasure in heaven. Or C, salvation is by faith alone, apart from works.
It's A.
He didn't even hesitate. It's A. So you were raised Catholic, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Carla?
Yes, that is correct. Now, it is important that we specify the particular stage or phase of our salvation that our good works do play a causal role in. And that would be the ongoing and final stages of our salvation. For as the Church has infallibly taught, with regard to that initial phase or stage of salvation, the good works that we perform prior to it that do play a role in disposing us for the gift of salvation, but they do not have a causal role in acquiring that grace of salvation or meriting it. And so it's very important that we understand and at which phase those good works come into play for our salvation. And the reason is because we have to have charity in the soul in order for it to be a principle and virtue of which we can merit the gift, the final gift of salvation and increase in sanctifying grace and all that.
All right, nicely done. I think we got time for this question before we have to take a break. So this is your second question of round two for you, Mark. What is the Catholic belief regarding the transmission of original sin? A, it affects only those who commit personal sins. B, it is a metaphor for our evolution from lower animals. Or C, it is transmitted to all through humanity through Adam and Eve. Once again, what is the Catholic belief regarding the transmission of original sin? A, it affects only those who commit personal sins. B, it is a metaphor for our evolution from lower animals. Or C, it is transmitted to all humanity through Adam and Eve.
B, letter C.
Once again, raised Catholic.
Good job, Mark. Yeah, transmitted to all humanity through Adam and Eve. The Council of Trent infallibly taught this in Canon 3 of its decree on original sin, teaching that the sin of Adam is indeed transmitted by propagation, not by imitation, and is transfused into all. And we cannot deny that.
Dr. Carlo Broussard is our guest. Alex and Mark are our contestants. We continue with the Catholic Answers Game Show right after this. When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your Catholic Answers Game Show host, because we're playing the Catholic Answers Game Show. In the United States today, it's a holiday. It's a holiday-ish. I guess banks are closed, government offices are closed, but I don't. 7-Eleven's open. I know that. So I'm not exactly sure how Columbus Day works. I don't know how they decide like which ones are the big ones and which ones are the like, we kind of do it. I'm not really sure if there's some government committee that decides that or how that works. But Alex and Mark are here, both of them students, one a graduate, one a current student at John Paul the Great Catholic University. John Paul the Great up in Escondido, right downtown in Escondido, mm-hmm. A beautiful location. You're a graduate now. Did you enjoy your time there?
I did. I wish I'd stay longer, but I had transfer credits, so my time there went like very fast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is it kind of nice to be in a town?
It is. Everyone there is so nice. They really like our presence there. So we like help like some of the local businesses. Before we came, there one was like on the verge of closing, but after we moved in, all of our students just flooded there, get coffee, and then we like helped them out.
Yeah, yeah. And is a big school, small school, what's it like to go there?
It's around like 200, 300 students.
Total?
Yes.
Or in, oh, per class? Oh, so it's small.
It is small.
University. Now you're in your sophomore year. Mm-hmm. Do you have to do Catholic classes like philosophy and theology and that kind of thing? So you study all.
I'm taking two next quarter.
You're taking two. What are you taking?
It's about the New Testament. It's just like a study of the New Testament, and then the other one's philosophy of nature. And it's taught by the Chaldeans up in El Cajon. So, mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That is such a great cooperation.
We're those in El Cajon.
Yeah, you're in El Cajon.
Right. I said up in El Cajon.
Yeah, but from you, yeah. But okay, so you're going to study the New Testament. You should probably go right into class and tell them you got your New Testament question right already. You did the Catholic Answers game show, and you knew it was it the Gospel of John? I think you got that.
Matthew.
Yeah, Matthew.
Oh, it was Matthew for you. It was John for you. Yeah, all right. So I would say there should be some kind of extra credit for that. And if you want me to call the professor, you can.
Yeah, call Father Anquito.
Oh, it's Father Anquito?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll call him. It would be a very small fee to get me to call him. All right, I wouldn't cost a lot. But that's cool, though, that we have a Catholic university up the road from us training people to be in the media. I think mm-hmm. that's wonderful.
Yes.
What if people want to – is gaming part of their program or no?
Yeah, they have game development there.
Game development. Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. Are either of you interested in that or no?
No, but I have a lot of friends who are. And it's kind of like – a lot of it is just like they teach like how to do it like well, and then there's just a lot of discussion like at least in the classes or from the teachers about how like the motto is impact culture for Christ, so like how do you evangelize through it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
see, I think there's a kind of many Catholics are disappointed in Catholic institutions right now. There's a sense of gosh, we're just not doing what we should be doing. But then there are these wonderful institutions, some of them young, some of them old, like John Paul the Great Catholic University, that are where you go there, you get a real Catholic education there. Mm-hmm. At least that's my understanding,
yes.
Right? And
mm-hmm.
then, but you also come out ready to go out into the world of business, the world of media.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it. And now we're going to finish round two. And at the end of this, we find out who's going on to his final judgment. Do you understand? Have you heard the term final judgment anywhere before? Do you know what your final judgment is?
Mm-hmm. I heard it on a game show, but in general, yes.
Oh, in general, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it refers to, you know...
Mm-hmm.
Jesus?
Yes.
Okay, I just didn't know if you got
Jesus,
all right. I just wanted to see how good your Catholic education was. All right, this is your last question of rounds one and two. Alex, how does Catholic social teaching view the role of government in economic affairs? Holy smoke, I didn't even remember I wrote this question. This should be fun. Let's find out what I wrote. How does Catholic social teaching view the role of government in economic affairs? A, government and intervention should be minimal. B, government should promote the common good. Or C, government should control the entire economy for the good of the poor. Once again, how does Catholic social teaching view the role of government in economic affairs? A, government intervention should be minimal. B, government should promote the common good. Or C, government should control the entire economy for the good of the poor.
Well, might as well ask Dr. Carlo for the lifeline.
Oh, I wasn't going to tell him to do it. But I guess we're going to get some Igpe Atinle. Dr. Carlo Broussard will now give the correct answer, but in pig Latin.
All right, so... the first word is the same in all three, right? So that's government. Overmintge, right? So overmintge, hutse, romotpe, hete, amanse, udge.
So udge. So do you know which it is? Udge. A, B, or C?
I'm going to act like I understood what he said and say B.
Very good. You are correct, sir. Government should promote the common good.
Yeah, paragraph 1898 of the Catechism talks about this, talking about the authority of those who govern a society or the human community. The role is to ensure as far as possible the common good of the society. But it also, in 1883, talks about the principle of subsidiarity, right? According to which a community of the higher order should not interfere in the internal life of a community of the lower order. depriving the latter of its functions, but rather should support it in case of the need and help to coordinate its activity with the activities of the rest of society, always with a view to the common good. So part of the common good involves allowing lower orders of society to function according to their own abilities, skills, and principles, and that higher order being there to assist the lower order and interfere in the sense that whenever the lower order needs help from the higher order that has further resources to promote their own good, and that in and of itself belongs to the common good.
All right, nicely done. You have finished rounds one and two with one incorrect answer. So you have one incorrect answer. This, Mark, is your final questions of round one and two. According to Catholic social teaching, what is the role of private property in economic life? A, it should be extremely limited with most things owned communally. B, it is an absolute right. C, it should serve the common good. Once again, according to Catholic social teaching, what is the role of private property in economic life? A, it should be extremely limited with most things owned communally. B, it is an absolute right. Or C, it should serve the common good.
It would be B.
Oh! The absolute there being the key word.
Oh.
So the Catechism in paragraph 2403 talks about the right to private property. It does not do away, it says, with the original gift of the earth to the whole of mankind. The universal destination of goods remains primordial, even if the promotion of the common good requires respect for the right to private property and its exercise. And then in 2406, it states this: political authority has the right and duty to regulate the legitimate exercise of the right to ownership for the sake of the common good. And so it is the case that sometimes private property may be such that it becomes an impediment to achieving the common good of society, and those with legitimate authority exercising oversight and governance of the human community can exercise their duty and their right to regulate the use of that private property for the sake of the common good. And now, as to when does that take place and what are the principles governing that, that gets a little bit dicey sometimes and very difficult to determine. But that the right is not absolute is according to church teaching there.
But we're often, Americans are often taught to think that property is the right to private property is an absolute right. All right, well, we're through rounds one and two. The supercomputer has crunched the numbers, and it does turn out that Alex ends up with more points at the end of the two rounds, but you are both absolutely fantastic guests. Mark, we're super grateful for your coming in and doing the game show with us, and you're going to get the full Carlo Broussard pack you will get. Let's see if I can do it, Carlo. Prepare the way, overcoming obstacles to God, the gospel, and the church. You will get meeting the Protestant challenge. You will get Purgatory is for Real, good news about the afterlife for those who aren't perfect yet. You will get meeting the Protestant response, and you will get the Saints. Oh, wait, there's one more, the relativism book.
The new relativism.
Good Lord, I can't even do them on one hand anymore, Carlo. I can't even do
that's
them
right.
on one hand.
Yeah, we're on to the second hand, buddy. Saints pray for you.
You'll get the new relativism, and you will get the book that I gave to both of you, the new book, The Saints Pray for You, from Dr. Carlo Broussard. Thank you very much, Mark.
No problem.
We really enjoyed that.
Well, it's fun.
Oh, another handshake from the two friends.
We're friends.
From John Paul, the Great Catholic University. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Alex's final judgment right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
One of the biggest mistakes a Christian can make is to try to do good without God's help. Saint Therese said, "When we trust only ourselves and not God, our soul becomes incapable of virtue." Her remedy? Works of charity. And the greatest work of charity is to share the gospel. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we encourage you to share the gospel with someone who doesn't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
He is honored as the newest doctor of the church with the title Doctor of Unity.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
A second century bishop, theologian, and martyr, St. Irenaeus of Lyon was a fierce defender of the faith against the heresy of Gnosticism. He reminded Catholics of every century that heresy cloaks itself in appealing guise, but that the antidote is a sound teaching handed down by the apostles.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host. Dr. Carla Broussard is our guest, and we have one contestant standing for his final judgment. Alex is here for his final judgment. And let me explain to you how it works. You got seven true or false questions. For each question, before I ask you the question, I will name a prize. If you get it right, you get that prize. If by some miracle of genius that you possess within you, you get all seven correct, we also give you a bonus prize that I don't know what it is. Anybody have an idea what the bonus prize is? Let's say, Carla, what do you have in the School of Apologetics? What class do you have in school?
I have the Intercession of the Saints and Purgatory.
All right, so we'll give you your choice of the Intercession of the Saints or Purgatory, if you get all seven correct, a feat that is rarely accomplished. And are you ready?
Yep.
All right, and Mark stayed in the studio, but he has promised he will not give you assistance. I will be monitoring him closely for any assistance he attempts to give you. True or false? Oh, for the first one, let's play for, let's play for Tim Staples' big book, Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines. Very popular book. I think you'll enjoy it. True or false? According to Catholic doctrine, baptism is necessary for salvation and can be administered by anyone, even an unbaptized person. Once again, true or false? According to Catholic doctrine, baptism is necessary for salvation and can be administered by anyone, even an unbaptized person.
The last part is like tripping me out. Does it matter like?
Don't you look at him.
I'm talking. does it mean like any circumstance?
No, it just means
baptism by blood.
Say you are dying and you're like, I need someone to baptize me. I want to be baptized before I die. Does the church say it has to be a baptized person or can absolutely anyone?
I'll say false. I think they should probably be baptized.
Oh man.
Dang.
Oh, Alex. Yeah, the catechism, first of all, in 1257, in paragraph 1257, the catechism, quoting our Lord, says, hey, baptism is necessary for salvation, John 3:5. And then in 1256, in case of necessity, anyone, even a non-baptized person with the required intention can baptize. Even an atheist, somebody who doesn't even believe in God, as long as they intend to do what the church intends to do, that baptism will be valid.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
So have you been baptized already?
Yes.
All right. Well, probably didn't need to study that one then because you've already been baptized. All right. Question number two. Let's play for this book right here, Joe's book. I got it right here. The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, the Catholic Witness of the Fathers in Christianity's First Two Centuries. All right. True or false, the Sacrament of Holy Orders has four levels, deacon, priest, bishop, pope. Once again, the Sacrament of Holy Orders has four levels, true or false? Deacon, priest, bishop, pope.
I'll say, the Pope is the Bishop of Rome, so I'll say false.
Nicely done.
Yeah, good job.
Nicely done. And good for you, Mark. I'm going to also give you this book because you wanted to help, but you did not help on that on that question. And he reasoned exactly perfectly, didn't he?
Carl. Yes. I was waiting to see if you wanted me to speak or not. Yeah. That was an awkward silent moment.
Sorry.
That's right. Yeah. So the Pope, as Alex rightfully thought through it, is a bishop. And his role as Pope is a unique role of leadership that he, as Bishop of Rome, has. But yeah, deacon, priest, and bishop are the three levels of holy orders.
Okay. Let's go. How about we play for Purgatory is for Real? That's a great book. And you're going to get asked a lot of questions about purgatory in your life. You're going to have a lot of questions about purgatory. And it's good news about the afterlife for those who aren't perfect yet. That's also the subtitle of the book. All right. True or false? You're playing for Carlo's book, Purgatory is for Real. True or false? Orthodox Christians, big a capital O, Orthodox Christians, venerate Mary and the saints. True or false? Orthodox Christians venerate Mary and the saints.
I'll say true.
Yes, that is definitely right. And in fact, they probably do it a little bit better than we.
Do you? Was there a reason why you said true? What was your thinking?
I just know that in some cases that you can also receive the Eucharist like at an Orthodox church. So oh. I'm like, I know it's not like that far apart compared to like other.
I think you reasoned very well. You are, I think it's you guys have a positive thing in your relationship with the Chaldean Catholics too. You get to know Catholics who are not or are closer to the East, really. Mm. And I think that's always healthy for us. So, all right, well done. What should he play for next? How about, you know what book I love? Secrets from Heaven. I love that book. It's on the Parables and Sayings of Jesus by Father Sebastian Walsh. It's a beautiful book. You can read that one to your kids. I mean, not now, when you have kids. All right, ready? True or false? Playing for Father Sebastian Walsh's Secrets from Heaven. True or false, the Catholic Church has always held that there is no salvation outside the visible boundaries of the church. Once again, true or false, the Catholic Church has always held that there is no salvation outside the visible boundaries of the church.
False.
Take your time, man. Slow down.
Yeah, the Catechism of the Catholic Church talks about this. In the possibility of salvation outside the visible boundaries of the church in paragraphs 846 through 848, that's sort of the general context. But it is true that one can be outside the visible boundaries of the church and not be responsible for that lack of visible unity, and thereby possibly still be united to the church, at least invisibly. And in turn receive salvation because of it. And this is why the church can say with the constant teaching of the church, there is no salvation outside the church. That is to say, no one can be saved apart from the church. But that doesn't necessarily mean outside the visible boundaries. That simply means whatever grace one is saved by, it's because of their at least invisible union with the church, assuming that their lack of visible unity is due to no fault of their own.
All right, you're rolling now. You're rolling. All right, let's play for a Jimmy Akin book. We haven't given you any Jimmy Akin books. How about The Bible is a Catholic Book? This is Jimmy Akin's book. This will help you in your New Testament class, too. All right, so I am on which question? The Catholic Church. Oh, okay, this is a good one for Jimmy Akin's Bible book. True or false, the Catholic Church teaches the Bible is the primary authority for the faithful, followed by sacred tradition, and then the magisterium. Once again, true or false, the Catholic Church teaches that the Bible is the primary authority for the faithful, followed by sacred tradition, and then the magisterium.
You see, what I'm tripped up about is like the order of it. Like if you switch the order around.
Okay.
But I don't want to gamble that, so I'll just say true.
Wait, why don't you want to gamble it?
Because I think it's wrong.
Wait, so you
no, like I know I think it's true also. Like
you think it's true but I think what you're saying is false thing because you don't I don't want to talk you into saying false and getting the answer right, but your reasoning was correct, but then you gave the wrong answer. The Catholic Church teaches the Bible is the primary authority for the faithful. You said you don't think that the order is right, that the Bible is primary over tradition and the magisterium. It sounds like, what do you want to say? Is that true or false?
Well, no, I know the Bible, I feel like the Bible is there, and then like the magisterium, I don't know where the tradition falls in that area, so I don't know if you switched it.
Oh, yeah. I see. I didn't understand what you said. So, all right, so I will ask you again, true or false?
True. Is that wrong?
I was trying to, wrong, yeah. True or false? That's what I was trying to get you.
I think I broke my own brain.
You did, but no.
The primary authority is key there because the church teaches that both scripture and tradition transmit God's revealed truth. And so consequently, they both contain God's divine revelation and thus are equally binding on us as Catholics. Now, it is true that the magisterium takes a secondary role here, although possessing infallible authority, the magisterium is the servant of the Word of God contained in both sacred scripture and sacred tradition. So it would be false to say that sacred scripture has more authority than sacred tradition. No, they're equal in value because they both contain God's divine revelation.
So I'm going to give you the book, The Bible is the Catholic Book, just because I think you need it.
Thank you.
After that journey, I think you need it. All right, here we go. We're playing now for... I'm trying not to pick any of Carlo's books because I'm going to let you play for all of Carlo's books on the last one. So let's go with... we have a new book called Sola Scriptura Doesn't Work. I think you'll like that. Sola Scriptura Doesn't Work. One of the newest books from Catholic Answers Press. True or false? True or false? Jesus once had a conversation with Moses and Elijah. True or false? Jesus once had a conversation with Moses and Elijah.
True.
What? Where? Where did he have a conversation with
Moses? The Transfiguration.
Ah, good for you. Good for you.
Good job, Alex.
I thought that was absolutely a trick question. I was like, wait.
Yeah, you got to pay attention to the names because he might have said like Noah or something. Yeah. You know? Yeah, Jesus was chatting it up with old Moses and Elijah. And that's very important apologetically too, right? Because Moses died and there you have Jesus talking to a dead guy. And so if, like our Protestant friends say, that it is absolutely wrong for us to quote unquote communicate with the dead, which they think is necromancy, which in fact is not, well, then Jesus would be leading us into immoral behavior, which is absurd. So that conversation comes into play with regard to the debates about invoking the saints to pray for us.
All right, so here's what we're going to do for the last question. We're going to play for all of the Carlo Roussard books that you have not yet won, so that you will, at the end of this, if you get this right, you will have the entire Carlo Roussard pack plus all the other books that we gave you. Are you ready?
No.
All right. It's not a trick question. All right. Okay. I'm just going to start right there. There's no twists or turns in this question. It's just a true or false question. All right? True or false? Mary is the mother of the church. Once again, true or false? Mary is the mother of the church.
True.
Thank God. I thought you were going to go, like, I don't know. You're going to do some twisted.
I was already like, I almost went down that path, and I'm just like, no, I'm just saying it.
You almost tried to talk yourself out of it? Yeah, all right.
Kind of. Yeah.
Carlo, Mary's the mother of the church?
Yeah, we have biblical precedent for this. In Revelation 12:17, after John describes the woman clothed with the sun, as the mother of the Messiah, the one who gives birth to the male child to rule with a rod, with an iron rod. Verse 17, John says that her offspring are those who keep the commandments of the Lord. And that would be us, Christians. And so John reveals to us that Mary, this heavenly woman, it has spiritual children and thus is the mother of all of believers in Jesus. And so and that's what the church is, right? So she's the mother of the church. And of course, this is coming from Lumen Gentium in the Second Vatican Council, section 53 in the document. She is clearly the mother of the members of Christ. So the document states, since she has by her charity joined in bringing about the birth of believers in the church who are members of its head. And old Pope St. Paul VI, in his discourse on November 21st, 1964, would call Mary the mother of the church as well. So indeed, she is the mother of the church.
I just enjoyed having both of you here so much. Medicine to the heart to meet young men taking their faith seriously, living that, and doing it in a way like you're nice guys. It's really a pleasure to get to meet you, and well, not to meet you, but I have met you before. But to get to have you come in and enjoy the game show with us. I hope you did enjoy it. Did you have fun?
It was very fun. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you. You're wearing a medal. What medal do you wear around today?
This miraculous medal.
Oh, that's a miraculous medal.
My high school actually gave it to us for graduation.
Oh.
So I've been wearing it since. It's got a rope instead of a chain because that fell off, but yeah.
I could talk to you all day. You know what? What you just got to do is go with answer number one. That's what I believe about you. Now. From now on, go with answer number one. Our guest has been Dr. Carlo Broussard. Check his work, his podcast out at SundayCatholicWord.com. Alex and Mark have been our contestants, both of them students from John Paul the Great Catholic University. Check out John Paul the Great Catholic University. It might be of interest to you and your family as you consider university. Thank you both again. I really enjoyed it. And that will do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.